We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
High atop the San Francisco skyline, this is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
Each and every week, we love to dive deep into the law of Major League Baseball. Keith Law from ESPN, always good enough to join us talking about the grand old game, which saw a grand old brawl over the weekend. You could say the odor is still wafting throughout Twitter. Odor. I think you got what I was doing there, Keith. How are you?
Odor. And I got what you were doing, but I'm not going to acknowledge it.
Thank you very much. Let's pretend none of that just happened. I'm sure Jose Bautista would like to pretend that none of that just happened. That's not exactly the look you want put down on film. There's a lot to talk about them waiting to do it, about why they did it. I would love to go inside your mind to get your thumbprint of this one.
Well, so they're saying, it sounds like this, some of this bad blood goes back to the bat flip in last year's playoffs. I have a feeling if Bautista doesn't slide hard into second base, and I actually didn't think it was a violation, all the umpires ruled it was, of the new slide rule, but if he doesn't go hard into Odor, then probably this doesn't happen. Or if the Rangers were really hell-bent on doing it, they would have had to manufacture the controversy somehow. But with Bautista going hard into Odor, who likes to slide pretty hard and wide into second base himself, he just doesn't appreciate it when runners do it to him, then that sort of gave the perfect opportunity for, if they were waiting for it, perfect opportunity for them to start something, or maybe it was just tension under the surface that finally boiled over there. You know, that said, when was the last time you actually saw a ball player land a full-on punch to the face in one of these brawls?
I don't know who.
Like a little slap fight.
Right.
And we're done.
I don't know which broadcaster it was, but somebody on the Texas Rangers broadcast team said, well, now Odor is 2 for 5 today. That's how much he connected on that one. What should the suspension be?
Well, that's what I was just going to say. It's like Bryce Harper swearing at the ump. You do it on camera, you've just made it worse. Harper probably doesn't get suspended for swearing at the ump like that if it wasn't for the fact that he was caught square on camera. Now, in this case, Odor was going to get suspended one way or another, but instead of maybe getting away with 4 games, it becomes 8. Instead of 5, it becomes 10. 8 to 10 is kind of the range I've been guessing. Maybe a little more like 8, just because it seemed like there were tensions both ways. It was a fight both ways. And although Odor will get the longest suspension because he, you know, I hate to sound like a juvenile, but he started it.
Right.
I think Bautista should get some too. He'll probably get a couple of games in it, and then there'll be a bunch. But John Gibbons had already been ejected and ended up back on the field, even though he was supposedly trying to calm things down. You can't do that. So he's going to get suspended. It's going to be a really long press release when that comes out.
Yeah, it will be. We're talking with Keith Law about Major League press releases, and we got one today about Tim Lincecum. And it looks like Lincecum's going to be an Angel. And, you know, I'm happy for the guy. I've always thought he was good for the sport of baseball. He used to be the most fun watch in all of baseball. It's been a long time since those days. He'll always have a free lunch waiting for him in San Francisco. 3 World Series, 2 no-hitters, and 2 Cy Youngs will do that. But what do you expect to see from him, if anything, down in Anaheim that'll matter?
And I'll just mention, I had a couple columns up today going back to the 2006 draft, which was his draft class, and pointed out the Rockies were originally, they picked 2nd, and everyone thought they were going to take Longoria. Their baseball ops people wanted to take Longoria. If that had happened, apparently ownership came down and said, nope, you got to take a pitcher. We're the Rockies, we need pitching, you got to take a pitcher. If they had taken Longoria, the Rays picked 3rd and had a deal in place with Tim Lincecum.
Wow.
So Giants franchise history was altered by the Rockies ownership saying, no, you have to go take a pitcher instead.
That's good stuff.
It's you know, when it's 10 years later, people have a lot more to share, and you get a lot more detail. I ended up with some pretty cool anecdotes on some of the, especially some of the lower drafted players, going back, talking to the area scouts, say, who drafted those, you know, so Chris Archer in the fifth round, who's now, you know, a Cy Young contender.
Right.
But anyway, back to your question on Lincecum. I think if they use him in some kind of long relief role where he doesn't have to pitch back-to-back days, there may be some value there. If they try to put him in the rotation, I just say that because the Angels could use about three more starters right now, then I think they're going to be disappointed. It's been probably 3 years since he's shown any ability to help someone in the rotation. And I give him what velocity he showed in that showcase. It's hard for me to see him as an effective starter in either league, but I feel like it's even worse in the American.
Meanwhile, Tim's old team, the San Francisco Giants, might have just played their best stretch of baseball throughout the year. They're still not hitting the cover off of it, but they've won five in a row. They're four games above 500 and in first place here. And not that it matters at all this time of the year, but, you know, it's always good to be in first place rather than not, I guess. Do you think
better there than last?
Yeah, sure, sure.
You're not trying to make up ground you lost with a bad eight.
Yeah, that's for sure. Actually got halfway decent starts out of PV and Kane. Don't know about the sustainability of that, but if they can just get back to average, if they could just give this team five innings every 5 days, Giants could be right in this thing.
Yeah, this looks more like the team I expected them to be. I expected the offense to regress. We've talked about that a lot. And most of those hitters have taken a step back. Brandon Belt looks like he's finally taken the huge step forward that, I mean, I think I've been forecasting that for him for 4 years now.
Yep.
And it's just the plate discipline is unbelievable. And that really makes me feel like it's sustainable. That, okay, maybe he doesn't hit 330 all year, but that he can hit for a high average and hit for the power that really has never quite been there for him. So that makes me feel good. I agree with you. PV and Kane looked better. Should they be average? That might be asking a bit much. But you don't have to be average to be a fifth starter. I think if those guys are just essentially better than the guy you pull out of AAA, and they can give them five innings on a somewhat regular basis. Look, five innings and two or three runs doesn't look pretty on the ERA, but that's probably enough for the Giants to stay in those games, and you don't end up torching the bullpen, because this is what a lot of teams that don't really have five major league caliber starters end up with, is you start blowing out your bullpen early. By the time you get to July, half of them are on the DL or they're just worn out, and suddenly you're scrambling for replacements. The Giants, I think the plan going into the season was the rotation would be durable enough, providing enough innings that they wouldn't get to that situation.
Where were you, Keith Law, when Danny Valencia announced his presence?
I was home with a sick kid yesterday.
Oh, okay.
And I was aware of it, and then the brawl happened. And, of course, it was literally, you know, my daughter was sort of half asleep on the couch, so I'm on Twitter and half watching games. When the brawl happened, that was it.
Right.
As if there was no other baseball
game. Right. Danny Valencia hit the wrong day to go deep three times.
That's
he really
right.
did.
That's exactly it. Well, bad marketing.
If he wants to take it out on the Rangers, he can. That's who's in town to take on the A's tonight. I would suggest nobody slide hard into second. Just little tip from me to them. We've got Sean Manaea on the hill. He's 0-1 at times. He's looked really good. You can also look to the right of that and see his ERA is 11.37. Do you think without a good start tonight, he's going bye-bye?
Probably. Although, look, if they wanted to keep him around and maybe slide him into a relief role, just to kind of get his feet wet, you hate having a guy come up, get smoked like that, go back down with a double-digit ERA. Did he get anything out of it? Is there more benefit in the case of a guy like Manaea who could, look, he's dominated up through double-A so far in his career. If they decide that there's more to be gained from having him face major league hitters just once through the order in a sort of a carefully cultivated relief role for his development, I would be 100% behind that. It's a good way to break in a starting pitcher, and he's clearly got some specific things to work on. I'm actually very surprised in his case. So I feel like we've talked before. He's got a lot of deception in his delivery.
Yeah.
So he's not deceiving anybody right now. So what's going on? Is something changed? I haven't seen him from behind the plate, so speculating. That might be one of those reasons, though. The major league coaching staff says, no, keep him up here. We want to work on something specific that we've spotted, as opposed to just saying, nah, he's not ready. Let's send him down.
Why do you think Sonny Gray's off to a slow start?
I don't know. You know, the stuff looks pretty good, close to regular velocity. Seems like his location's been off. I'm not as worried about him as I am about Felix Hernandez, where the velocity really is off. And then you wonder, Felix's case, too. He's older. He's got more innings. Maybe he's just wearing down at this point. So I'm, without any specific reason to say why, I'm cautiously hopeful that something's going to turn around.
Keith, always great to talk to you, man. Thanks very much. We'll be in touch next week at some point in time, and I'm sure Tim Lincecum will have taken over baseball and proven us both wrong by that time.
My pleasure.
Thanks very much, Keith Law, here on 95.7 The Game. Sean Manaea, time for you to catch a little fire. Like Khaleesi. He's 0-1 with an 11.37 ERA, and like, you know, like Keith is talking about, what's best for a guy? Keeping him up here, having him earn his stripes, learning on the job at the highest level, or going back to the minors where you dominated and kick around that 11 ERA in your mind for the whole time that you're down there, knowing, yeah, if I can get it down done here, that didn't mean much up there. I mean, look, in a season like this, if he's got major league potential, for reals, keep him on the major league team. You're going nowhere fast all year long, and I think that's going to be obvious, right? It's not being rude. It's just being obvious. 888-957-9570. Make sure you stick around. We got Jim Barnett coming up at 4:30, talking an awful lot about Warriors and Thunders. And we're going to pick it up with the coaching matchup next.
The Damon Bruce Show. 95.7 The Game. We're back with the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Coaches, coaches, coaches. What does it mean in the NHL? Very little. Let's be honest with you. You can change your NHL coach like socks, and it probably won't greatly alter the course of a team, a season. There are like four or five guys who know how to win the cup, and everyone else is just pretending that they know how to win the cup. And that's why you see so much, almost without fanfare, without headline, without people even noticing, hockey coach turnover. We'll see if it makes a difference for the Sharks a little bit later on in this series. An NBA coach, you'd think, is someone who, you know, probably is in charge of running a practice, but it's a players' league. It's not a coaches' league. We all know that. Players make 10, 20, 30, 100 times more than the coaches do. So there's your power structure right there. But a good coach can be the difference between you are a very good team and you are a champion. And it's like that in all sports. It really is, even the NHL. Don't underestimate the coaching matchup in this series. And let's just start with the default setting of Steve Kerr, Luke Walton, Ron Adams and company is the best coaching staff remaining in this series. You know, Tyronn Lue, Billy Donovan, they're both rookie coaches, and Dwayne Casey, you're solid in Toronto, but chances are you're not making it to the NBA Finals. You're not getting through Cleveland. So we'll worry about Dwayne Casey if we have to in a series from now, if the Raptors stun the world and show up in the NBA Finals. Billy Donovan is in his rookie year as a coach, and he's sitting in the Western Conference Finals. The last guy I can think of doing that was, oh yeah, Steve Kerr. He was in the Western Conference Finals his rookie year as a head coach. You look at what Billy Donovan has been through in year one. He's got stigma of rookie coach, dealing with a locker room that isn't getting along like peaches and herb the entire season. He's got the egos of Durant and Russell Westbrook to manage. And then you look at the other things that happened around him and to the Oklahoma City Thunder, who had a weird ownership death right after a member of the ownership was named in like a federal case. You have Monty Williams, who sadly, tragically had his wife pass away, killed in a car accident this last summer, this fall. Mo Cheeks. He had to leave in February for hip surgery. So the guys that Donovan assembled to be with him in his rookie year as a head coach, for two very different but legitimate reasons, weren't there for an awful lot of the season, yet here his team is still in the Western Conference Finals. He also took down Greg Popovich's Spurs. That's a mighty task. They won on the Spurs court twice. twice. Do you realize that there are more postseason than regular season defeats for San Antonio on their home court this year? That's got to be a first in NBA history. Except for maybe the Celtics. Maybe they dumped a couple playoff games in the year that they went 40-1. But, I mean, that's insane. That's absolutely insane. The Thunder. If the Thunder make it all the way there, do you realize what they've gone through to get there? They're already about to become the first team in NBA history to play against two 67-win or more teams en route to try and get to the finals. They went through a 67-win Spurs team. Now that I got to go through a 73-win Warriors team. Let me tell you, if the Thunder win this series, like, there will be nothing but respecting and genuflecting and oh my God. Like, it would be amazing that they have done that. And then to have the Cavaliers to get through, if that's the way it all plays out, and that's the way it's probably going to play out, that would be amazing. Absolutely amazing. The big coaching matchup, I think the one indicator, the tell move of the entire series is first, what do we get out of Bogut? Is Bogut playing? That's why John Dickinson's going to check in with us in a little more than an hour from now. Steve Kerr has already said he thinks Bogut's playing. How well will Bogut play? How well will Bogut move? He can protect the rim. We all know that. Can he come out on the switch? Can he play the shooter? Azeeley was doing better than that. How's Azeeley going to play when he's in for Bogut? Remember, Festus, he had a really nice couple games last round, didn't play once against the Oklahoma City Thunder all year long. And the Oklahoma City Thunder are a little bit different up front than most NBA teams are these days. They're big. They've got two bigs, and they're willing to play them both. Adams and Cantor on the floor is going to be the matchup that either pushes the Warriors right into small ball beauty or gets them out of their small ball playing and reacting to the moves that Billy Donovan has made. And if the Warriors are reacting and not proacting, that's not the word, proacting is not a word. If they're not the ones creating the matchup problems, but the ones reacting to the matchup problems, advantage Oklahoma. Advantage Oklahoma City right there. Going to be an interesting matchup. If the Warriors go big, if the Warriors try to double big, if you see Bogut and Azeeley and Spates on the court at the same time, on the low blocks, you will know right then and there that this team is giving Steve Kerr's team a little bit more of a handful up front than they wanted. Now, if the Warriors stick to their small ball plan, the plan is to run past them. We just saw the Toronto Raptors earn the biggest win in franchise history. Big win for the North. Not since Jon Snow and Sansa got back together has the North had a reason to celebrate like this. The Raptors scored 116 points, which is the most they've ever scored in a playoff game, closing out Game 7. Gianna, here's just the different styles of basketball that are played in the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference right now. I can promise you, I would bet, I'd be willing to wager, that there will be a loser in the Warrior-Thunder series that scores 116 points. Like, someone's going to score 116 points and lose a game in the Western Conference Finals, where 116 points means you've probably lapped the other team in the Eastern Conference. Somebody out here will score a buck 16 and lose. That's how fast the tempo is going to be. And if you want to run with the Warriors, even if you have Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, good luck. Good luck. There's no team I am more comfortable seeing in a track meet than the Golden State Warriors. And hopefully Steph's knee responds well tonight. Hopefully there's no other unwelcome injury issues along the way. If the Warriors go out there and handle their business, they should be able to take care of everything they need to take care of tonight. I wish I had a pair of tickets to give away to the Warrior game. I don't have Warrior tickets. How about some Hall & Oates tickets instead? I've got Jim Barnett to talk about the Warrior game coming up next. But right now, I'm going to give Hall & Oates tickets to caller number 5. Daryl Hall, John Oates, Saturday, September 18th, Concord Pavilion, caller number 5. You are going to Hall & Oates. 888-957-9570, caller number 5. Good luck. When we come back, I guarantee you that Jim Barnett used to hit the dance floor to a little Hall & Oates back in the day. Jim with his tight white guy afro. Yeah, it was a good look. Probably some flared pants. I also want to ask Jim about NBA brawling. If anything happened in the NBA like happened in Major League Baseball last night, oh my goodness, the whole world would be at DEFCON 1. Caller number 5 wins Hall & Oates tickets. Good luck. 888-957-9570. Jim Barnett coming up next.
The Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. We're back with the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals is tonight at Oracle Arena, and to set the stage is the man who helps Warrior fans through the entire season. He talks you through, well, what used to be lows, now mostly just highs. He is Jim Barnett from CSN Bay Area. Jim, it's been just, really, it's the golden age of Warrior basketball. They're 8 wins away from another NBA title. Did you think that they would be meeting the Oklahoma City Thunder here in the Western Conference Finals, or did you think it was going to be the Spurs?
Well, if you look at the regular season records, Damon, I thought it was going to be San Antonio, but somehow they wilted, and after dominating in Game 1 against the Spurs, they kind of fell apart, and Oklahoma seized the moment, and they are playing their best basketball of the season. They finished 54-26 this year, but they're playing much better than that record, and they've got a lot of confidence. They're getting a lot of help from the big men inside. Steven Adams has been playing terrifically lately, played really well in that San Antonio series. This is a significant matchup. This is, to me, the premier matchup of all the any series, Eastern Conference or Western Conference right now. This is for the marbles in a way, and I just think it's compelling basketball with these two teams, and we can talk about it in depth because you've got 5 stars. You've got 5 all-stars in the game, 2 for Oklahoma City and Durant and Westbrook, and then you've got Curry, Thompson, and Green on this side here. So it's going to be a shootout a lot of times, and both teams love to run. We'll just see how it all plays out, and what are your thoughts on asking me?
Yeah, no, I mean, it is something else. 5 of the 10 best players in the NBA are going to be in this series. There's no doubt about it. The better coach is Steve Kerr, but Billy Donovan, he's done a great job in his first year with the Oklahoma City Thunder, and it looked like, you know, moving on from Scotty Brooks, coaching was something they thought would be paramount to them taking that step forward. I don't know if it's coaching. I don't know if it's the emergence of Cantor and Adams playing next to each other. I don't really know if there's any credit that can go around beyond Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, because when those two guys are going right, sky's the limit.
Well, that's certainly, you know, they're capable of giving you 40-point games any given night, as are Curry and Thompson. But it's a team game, and I thought Cantor played extremely well this year. He doesn't take bad shots. He's a terrific rebounder. You know, the Warriors won the 3 matchups against them this year. It was an incredible miracle comeback in that game 2 when Stephen Curry made a career high, it was a career high, and an also NBA season tying 12 threes in the game. Oklahoma City had the lead in the fourth quarter in all 3 of those games, but the Warriors are a great comeback team. Durant averaged 36 points a game this year against the Warriors. Curry, I believe, averaged 35 points in those games this year. You've got tremendous scoring, and Curry, by the way, has 7 30 or more point games against Oklahoma City. So he plays well against them. He plays well against Westbrook. He rises to the occasion. You know, with Westbrook, the key is keep him out of the lane. Don't turn the ball over. If you turn the ball over, they're in the open court, and he's going to go to the basket and explode up and score for you. If you can keep him on the perimeter, he's just shot under 30% from three-point range this year. Yes, he can get hot. Anybody can get it going in any game, but you've got to play the percentages. I don't know how you stop Durant. Probably only Durant stops himself, just like Stephen Curry. But that big front line concerns me. You've got to be you know, we talk about health. I think it's imperative that Andrew Bogut plays. So it's questionable whether he plays tonight in game one. I think he will play. And Draymond Green has to stay out of foul trouble.
We're talking with Jim Barnett, the familiar voice from Warrior Broadcast on CSN Bay Area. How Azeeley reacts to whatever his level of responsibility is going to be is going to go a long way to determine this series. If he's given the yeoman's load of work at center with Bogut missing games or time, I mean, that's an advantage right there to the Thunder if they don't have it already. And I think watching Kerr react to Cantor and Adams is going to be very telling of how worried he is about that matchup. If we see him try to match big for big, if there were a moment where we had, you know, either Bogut, if he can go, and Azeeley on the floor together, or Azeeley and Spates on the floor together, if the Warriors get away from their mastery of small ball, that could be a little red flag, don't you think?
Well, it's certainly a concern because Oklahoma City will play two bigs at one time, always, and it causes problems for you. The Warriors got out-rebounded by this team. Now, here's what's interesting. They got out-rebounded by this team by 30 in one game and yet still won the game. So it comes down to lots of things because if the Warriors continue to score, if Thompson is scoring like he's been, I think he's made five or more threes in seven consecutive playoff games. If Stephen Curry steps up like we saw him after he came back from the injury, no matter what they do, can they outscore the Warriors? And particularly if they want to go out in the open court, it all comes down to this too. Turnovers. The Warriors didn't turn the ball over this year very much against Oklahoma City. Lately, they've been turning the ball over. They've got to play better, Damon, than they did in the Houston series are the Portland series. They can't be sloppy with the basketball. You're going to pay for it against Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City's got a lot of confidence, but the Warriors they've got a lot of confidence too. It's going to be a heck of a series, and there are so many variables. Where's the outlier? Is Deion Waiters going to come in and hit three threes for you coming off the bench? Or Anthony Morrow or something like that? How is Andre Iguodala going to score? Is Barnes going to come back into form and perform better and get his shot to go down and not be inconsistent? Can he defend some of the bigs like he's been able to do in the past? There are so many variables, and you just have to play it game by game, quarter by quarter. But it's such a compelling matchup. It's exciting. I cannot wait for the game tonight myself. You've got the two highest scoring teams in the league. But I know this. The Warriors cannot afford to turn the ball over a lot. If they do that, Oklahoma City is going to score, and they're going to score easily. And no one goes to the basket, particularly with the size that he possesses, and explodes to the basket and scores like Westbrook. And that's a real key. They've got to keep him on the perimeter.
Jim Barnett here on 95.7 The Game. With Steph out most of the first and second rounds, at least that's how it felt anyways.
Yes.
It really felt like Klay Thompson took yet another step forward in a season of forward steps for the guy. First, it was his confidence that came forward. Then a little bit of his braggadocio. Then his defensive game took a big step forward. His offensive prowess continues to grow. His leadership, I thought, took a step forward here in this postseason. Do you think he is a bona fide superstar in this league right now? And my goodness, if he were about to hit the open market the way that Harrison Barnes is, what might he be worth to another team?
Well, whatever they could pay, because yes, he's a star and he's someone you could focus your offense around. He could go to a bad team and he could score 25 a night easily. I mean, that's what, if they gave him a green light, he's got the capability. He's going to the basket much better. What I noticed, not only, when he comes up with big scoring games, he follows it up in a game with a good scoring game. And that's, the consistency is what I saw when Stephen Curry was out. He took that responsibility. It didn't seem to be a burden for him. It seemed to be an enlightenment and an opportunity, and that's the sign of a great player. And, yes, he is in that category of a great greatness in this league. He's one of the great players. There's no question about it because it really isn't anybody else shoots like that other than his teammate, Stephen Curry.
Yeah, there's just the only guy in the world who's like that guy plays with him. It's amazing.
Exactly. So it's a nice plus to have. So we don't even have to discuss that since he's not a free agent. So
thank goodness.
He signed up and he's getting plenty of money for that.
All right.
And so we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out in this series.
Real quick here at the end, one thing we have been discussing today are punches being thrown out of context, like non-boxing match punches, thanks to the big bench-clearing brawl we saw over the weekend in Major League Baseball. Jim, what is the worst NBA brawl you ever either saw or participated in?
Well, obviously, the brawl that we saw with the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah.
You remember that year?
Of course. Malice at the Palace.
Yeah, that was scary. That was scary for fans. I mean, when you have someone going up into the stands and hitting a fan, and that was the worst. And doggone scary. So, you know, there used to be fights. We didn't have brawls, you know, back in the 60s and the 70s. And there were fights, and sometimes I remember a fight between Tom Boerwinkel and Elvin Hayes. I was with the San Diego Rockets at that time, and Chicago had their center. And they got into a fight, and everyone just stood around and waited for it to end on its own volition. The officials did not intervene, and so you had Tom Boerwinkel swinging punches and Elvin Hayes swinging punches. And after about 45 seconds to a minute, and probably no longer than that, they were dog-tired. And they couldn't punch either one. And David, you could have come up and knocked out either one. And they quit, and the punches were just kind of like, you know, pats and everything, like you're messing around. And they just stopped, and they both got double technicals. Neither one got kicked out of the game, and the game went on.
Unbelievable. Neither one probably caught a suspension either.
No, oh, of course not.
Oh,
not
Jesus.
At all. No, yeah. They weren't kicked out of the game. They were not kicked
there
out.
There you
of the
go. Game. I'm guessing
That's
it was a slow night on Twitter that night.
Yeah, back in 1969.
Jim, thanks an awful lot. Hey, enjoy the series. Can't wait to bump into you over there. Always a pleasure seeing you, and always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on, Damon.
Can you imagine two guys in NBA uniforms just going toe-to-toe, throwing punches? No one interferes. No one gets thrown out of the game, ejected, or suspended the next day. Let me tell you, it was a different time, folks. It was a different time. Some would say it's low-hanging fruit. I think it's going to be a good segment. Best fight you've ever seen in a sport that wasn't boxing. Boy, we certainly got a contender of one of the best punches ever landed. Odor. Rugnid Odor. We'll never be able to pronounce your name correctly, yet we'll never forget it all at the same time based on what you just did to Jose Bautista. He tuned him up like a piano. Best fight you've ever seen? Not in a boxing match. In a sporting event. 888-957-9570. That's next on The Damon Bruce Show.
The Damon Bruce Show. On 95.7 The Game. Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Well, just about everybody I follow on Twitter that's at Oracle let me know that Andrew Bogut just took the court to start warming up for tonight, and that's good news.
Yeah.
For the Golden State Warriors. Last night, Jose Bautista got tuned up. I mean, Knuckle Sandwich Supreme landed right on his jaw. It was about as big a blow as I've seen landed in a non-boxing match sporting event. It really was. Two things. That's going to haunt Joey Bats the rest of his career. That is going to replay in your memory bank the way Robin Ventura going out to the mound and getting noogied to death by Nolan Ryan always automatically replays in my memory bank whenever you say something like Robin Ventura to me. It's the first thing I think of. Well, if the bat flip was the first thing you thought of, and obviously it was still on the minds of the Texas Rangers, maybe there's a new contender for what's your go-to Rorschach memory for this guy. That was embarrassing. However, and I'll give this to Jose Bautista, he walked through that punch. It stunned him a little. It would have clean, cold cock knocked out half the population.
At least, yeah.
Half the population would have been rendered unconscious right there. And he was not. I'll give him credit for that. I will give him credit for that. And I'll say this about the Texas Rangers. The fact that they waited to his last at-bat of the series, not just of the series they're playing in, but the season right. series to plunk him, is absolute Bush League tough guy, fake tough guy stuff. Now, I also think that Rougned Odor was not thinking about the bat flip when he did that. There might have been a lot of kindling on the fire, but what really lit his fire was the fact that Bautista just came in with a head of steam and tried to take him out at second base. Now you're messing with my knee. Now you're messing with my ankle. Now you're messing with my season, my career, my paycheck, my ability to feed my family. That'll make a guy throw a punch real fast. What is the best fight you've seen, not boxing, in the world of sports? We'll start with Dylan and Hayward. How you doing, Dylan?
Hey, great, Damian. You stole my thunder. I was going to pick Robin Ventura, Nolan Ryan fight. That's the funniest fight I've ever seen.
It's about as one-sided as you're ever going to see a mound charge go. He just got headlocked and beaten about the face.
I want to see. It gives me a new wish list. I want to see the Rangers play the Giants again in the World Series with Odor batting and Bumgarner throw at his head, and he charges him out, and Bumgarner does the same thing to Odor that Odor just did to Bautista.
You know, it'll probably be a long day. How about this? I'm going to go with Bumgarner never gets charged in his whole career. Where do I go to sign up for that? No one will ever charge Mad Bum.
Mm-mm.
I promise you, that's not going to happen. Brian's in Santa Clara. Brian, best fight you've ever seen?
Hi, I've got a couple. One was about 10 years ago at the A's game. Another Texas Ranger was getting heckled in the stadium by the fans, and he got so pissed he threw a chair into the stands and broke this lady's nose.
Yeah, was it like Felix Rodriguez who whipped that chair? I can't remember who exactly threw it, but it was... there was something going on with a fan, and a chair did go. But I don't know. That's just a chair getting thrown. Like, there were no punches, right? There was no fight.
Not too much. They had to restrain the guy, though. But another one where there were punches thrown was a long time ago. It was Red Sox versus Yankees, and Pedro Martinez grabbed Don Zimmer's head when he's 8 years old and, like, rolled him to the grass.
I saw that. Pedro Martinez talking about it one night, almost started crying. He said he was so embarrassed by doing that because he had so much respect for Don Zimmer. Don Zimmer also basically was never like old Popeye again after that. He left baseball, I think, after that season was over and done with. But I do remember that. And that was a bad look. You know, it's one thing to get into a fight. It's another thing to toss a 90-year-old or 80-year-old dude, you know. By the way, Pedro was in his right to do it, though. He really was. Don Zimmer was on his field, not the other way around. Lou in San Bruno. Lou, what do you got?
What's up, Damon?
How are you?
Not bad, man. Colin, great show. Hey, I got I'm going with the Ozzie Smith, Will Clark brawl in St. Louis.
Ozzie Smith is like the weirdest guy to ever be involved in a brawl, too, right?
Yeah. It was a good one. I gotta give it up to Candy Maldonado getting in there and getting the right hook in there.
Thank you. The Candy Man did come in to save the day, dropping a Wahoo McDaniel from the top rope. We go to Bob in Oakland. Bob, what do you got?
Hey, Damon, how you doing, man?
Doing well, thank you.
So I think to me, and I know you love basketball, so I'm gonna have to go with Barkley against O'Neal. When Barkley threw the ball off of Shaq's head and then started the melee, that was probably one of my favorite fights.
That was a good one, but again, did anybody land a punch of circumstance, or was they just throwing haymakers to the wind?
Well, you know what? Shaq threw a pretty good, straight right at him, but Barkley was able to dodge it. And then, if I remember correctly, I think Shaq got on top of him and was able to land a couple of shots because they were both down on the ground with guys trying to peel Shaq off of Barkley.
Either way, you put Shaq and Barkley in a fight, I'll tune in and watch it on pay-per-view. Whether anybody made good contact or not, that's still two big guys throwing.
Exactly, which was one of my favorite things. And if you don't mind, Damon, I just want to add that I'm so glad that this fight happened because I can't even remember the last time that people have talked about baseball like this since probably Bonds hit his 73rd home run. I mean, Scherzer just struck out 20 people, and no one's talking about it like they are about this punch and the fact that they were entertained by this event more than anything else that's happened.
You know, you're dead on right, man. Thank you very much for the call, Bob. there is something to be said there. I mean, it is weird what people sit down and want to see now. You know, baseball polices this as if it's bad for the game, but then you tune into sports talk radio the next day and it's all anyone's talking about. And if attention is good for you, then in a crazy way, this is good for you. I don't know if it's good or bad for baseball, but it is certainly good for the conversation around the game.
It's drawing attention. And every, you know, so far we've had one basketball reference, but it's all been baseball references.
Yeah, you do remember
those.
You
kind of start remembering
how
heated sometimes baseball gets.
And look, there's so many different layers to this conversation that we're having just on the first surface layer right now. Like, guys are allowed to do a lot more in the sport of baseball than they're allowed to do in the NBA. And I think that that's for a lot of different reasons. Some of them are cultural and business reasons. I think, you know, there is an absolute stigma. You know, one of the reasons why you're not allowed to leave the bench in the NBA fight is because they don't want, you know, guys running in and throwing haymakers. And I think that there is a serious concern with having a whole bunch of African-American males fighting toe-to-toe, and call it racist or packaged in racism or a concern about it. But, you know, David Stern, all those years ago when he came down heavy-handed on all this, was, I think, very concerned with the NBA's image.
Sure.
Like, bench-clearing brawl in baseball, for whatever reason, has a little tradition and charm attached to it. If it happens in basketball, all of a sudden the word thug is thrown out. I haven't heard anybody call Rognan Odor a thug today. I haven't heard anyone call that to Jose Bautista. And I don't even really necessarily want to go down this road. But, I mean, it's just saying there's so many different levels and layers to what happened yesterday, why that's allowed, you know, why some players in that sport are allowed to police themselves, but players in other sports aren't given nearly the leeway to police themselves. It's just odd. It's very interesting. It's there's a lot going on there. Carpenter in Pittsburgh. What do you got, Carpenter? How are you?
Hey, what's up, man? Hey, the fight, one of the fights I remember was Larry Bird against Dr. J.
That was a fight. That was real. Punches were thrown. Punches were landed.
Those guys were trying to kill each other. They were trying to choke each other out. I was about 10 years old when I saw that. I couldn't believe that was happening on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just a man with another man, hands wrapped around his neck.
Those guys were legends at the time, too. Those were the top, you know, some of the top NBA players at the time, too. That was amazing.
Absolutely.
I was watching that with my father. I couldn't believe that was going on.
Good call, man. Good call. Thank you. I'm sorry. You're breaking up a little bit there. You know, people are like, how come no one ever threw a punch at Michael Jordan? Two words, Charles Oakley. He was ready. He was there. He was going to stomp you if you did that. Look at this. People want to talk brawling.
They do.
I mean, I brought up the Scherzer 20 strikeout story last week. Not a single call was had. I don't have a line available right now. People want to talk about the base brawl. So we will do that when we come back next hour. But we're going to tip it all off at 5 o'clock with the main event, and that is us being an hour plus away from game one of the Western Conference Finals. Warriors and Thunder over from Oracle tonight. We will be checking in with John Dickinson next hour. We'll also be checking in with the one and only Grand Sage himself, Bruce Jenkins. Stay tuned. Much more coming up here on the Damon Bruce Show.
The Damon Bruce Show. 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.